Okay, we're picking up the Gemara on Dalad Amud Beis. We are 6 lines from the bottom. The words of She'ina Gvoa Asara Tfachim. So again, the Mishnah told us that if a sukkah is not at least 10 tfachim high, it is going to be puzzled, it's going to be invalid. So the Gemara wants to know me nullum, from where I know me daraisa, that this would be the case. Where is the source that less than 10 tfachim is going to be puzzled? Now the Pnei just points out, but wait a second. We learn on Dalad Amud Aleph, we already said that it's, according to Rav, it's a diras rucha, it's a place that's unpleasant. You don't want to live in something less than 10 tfachim. So apparently, we still want to know a source midaraisa. That was just a svara that would invalidate something less than 10 tfachim. We want to know a source midaraisa. Is there a pasuk? So the Gemara says, or a limud midaraisa. So the Gemara says, itmar. So we learn, Rav, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chaviva Masnu. So it was these Amuraim who were teaching this halacha, and the Gemara just parenthetically points out the Kula Seder Moed and all of Seder Moed, meaning we have the Seder Zrayim, Moed, Nashim, Mezikin, Kachim, Taro. So in Seder Moed and all of Seder Moed, Ki Kolai Gzuka, whenever these group of Chachamim have been mentioned, then Chalufi Rabbi Yochanan and Maile Rabbi Yonasan. Some Amuraim had the Girsa that it wasn't Rabbi Yochanan, rather it was Rabbi Yonasan. Okay, so that was their, that was who they said was the Memra of this statement. So the Gemara says, Aron Tisha v'Kaporas Tefach, that the Aron in the Mishkan was the Aron, right, with the Ark where the Luchos were in, that was 9 Tfachim tall, because it was 1.5 Amos, and we know an Amma is going to be 6 Tfachim, so it comes out that it's 9, the Aron is going to be 9 Tfachim tall. So then you have, that's the Aron Tisha, and Kaporas was the cover of the Aron, the golden cover of the Aron, that was going to be a tefach. The Gemara is going to learn, and then the next time we're going to try to figure out how do we know that a kaporis is a tefach. So we learn arei kan asar. From here, we learn the concept that there's a 10 tefachim, and from here we learn that that's the minimum share of a sukkah. Tosfos just point out that asar tefachim midal, and this whole thing is not just for halachas of sukkah, but this is also where we're going to know. We learned in Erevin for so many things. For the halachas of mechitzas, the minimum mechitza is 10 tefachim. For the halachas of Shabbos with regards to mechitza, that is also going to be learned out from over here. So we learn out uksiv no dati lo chasham dibarti lo chame ala kaporis. The pasuk also tells us in Shmos, the pasuk in Zefer Shmos, the pasuk tells us Hashem says, I'm going to set my meetings over there, and I'm going to speak to you above the kaporis, above the cover of the aron. Turning on to the next step. But now the Gemara says, v'tanya, we learn in a brayser, Rabbi Yossi says, ma'olam al yarda shchina lamata, that the Shechina never went below into a place where we live, in the human realm, rather, meaning in the place where we live. Below Alu Moshe v'Elia l'Marma, we never able to go all the way up to the heavens. Even the holiest people of Moshe and Eliyahu, when they went up to Shemayim, did not go all the way up to Shemayim. As the pasuk says, Shemar Shemayim, Shemayim Lashem, v'aretz l'san l'bnei Adam. Pasuk says that Shemayim, the heavens, and the sky is for Hakadosh Baruch Hu, and aretz is l'san l'bnei Adam, and the earth is given for us. Is for, so this is implied that Hashem is keeping the heavens for Himself, and only when the humans are not able to get there, that a person is not able to get there. And the same thing that Aretz Nasa Levnei Adam, that Hashem never really descended so far onto the ground. So the Gemara says, so then we're assuming, what are we saying further over here? So we're teaching us that if a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Shechina, had never gone into the area of a person, that area is below 10 tfachim. So if that's the case, then you could learn out that 10 tfachim from the ground is a separate reshus, it's a separate domain, and therefore 10 tfachim is going to be the minimum height of a mechitza with regards to the halacha of mechitzas and the halacha of sukkah as well. So the Gemara just wants to ask, so now we're going to discuss for a little bit now a different question. Is it really true that the Shechina had never really gone below down 10 tfachim? The pasuk says Hashem went out, Hashem's presence went down on Har Sinai. So the Gemara answers, l'mala masar tfachim. The Shechina still remained above 10 tfachim. When it said it went down, not all the way down onto the actual mountain, but above 10 tfachim from the mountain. That's what the Gemara is assuming right now. And the Gemara continues, so this pasuk is a reference to in Zechariah that's speaking about the Yemos HaMashiach, and it's going to it's very interesting. The pasuk over here says HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyafel. Obviously, we assume that HaKadosh Baruch Hu we believe that there is no that we don't refer to Hashem anthropomorphically, that Akash Baruch has body parts. We assume, like the Rambam, that that would be precocious to believe such a thing. This pasuk seems to whenever it does that, Unkelus, famously in the Torah, will deviate from the standard understanding of that, to avoid speaking Akash Baruch in terms of having body parts. So too over here, the pasuk says Vaksiv Amdu Ragla Bimu Bahal Zesim, that the feet will stand on Har Zesim, is actually a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the presence of the Shekhinah. It doesn't let him in his feet, but it means he's coming down. So the Gemara answers, and where it says, L'mala Masar Tfachim, still, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is coming down in Har Zesim, but yet, he's not going to be above, he's not going to be below, rather, below 10 Tfachim. So the Gemara says, below all the Moshe, below the Marim, on the other hand. So that was HaKadosh Baruch Hu not coming down. But is it really true that Moshe and Eliyahu never went up to Shemayim? They never went up to the heavens. V'aksiv Moshe alay Elohim. The pasuk says Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Hashem. He went up to the Shemayim. So Gemara says still l'mata masar. He still remained below 10 tefachim from the heavens. He did not reach all the way up. So Gemara says also by Eliyahu the v'aksiv v'yal Eliyahu v'asara Shemayim. The pasuk says Eliyahu went up to Shemayim. And this is the famous thing when Eliyahu was going. He never really died. So he went up to Shemayim. So the Gemara says, the Matabasar, still, he never went above 10 Tfachim, went below 10 Tfachim. Now he asks, V'hauk Siv, but wait a second, there's another pasuk in Iyov that says, Me'achiz b'nei chisei parshez alav adonov, amr b'tarnuch l'malamad shepir shakai meziv shkinos av adonov alav. What's this reference to? He's understanding, as Rashi points out, that this pasuk is in Iyov. It's telling us that parshez is really a Rosh Yitivos. It's an acronym for Pireis Shakai Meziv, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had put on his countenance, his radiance, on Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos that Moshe Rabbeinu went to receive the Torah, and he became scared that the Malachim were going to try to kill him, because they didn't want, the Malachim were upset, they didn't want a human to get the Torah. So they're upset that Moshe got it. So Hashem said, don't worry, so you should hold on to his Kisei HaKavod, and the Ziv, and his radiance, is going to protect Moshe Rabbeinu. So we see that when Moshe went up, that he was going up mamish into the area of Shemayim to receive the Torah. So the Gemara says, l'mata masar, still Moshe Rabbeinu remained below 10 tefachim, but not above 10 tefachim. So the Gemara says, we see that it allows him to hold the face of the Kisei HaKavod, Pnei Kisei, that he was holding the face of the Kisei HaKavod, and that's telling us that Moshe, that only possible if Lothori went all the way up to Shemayim to get to touch the Kisei, the throne. So the Gemara says, Ishtarbu like Kisei Adasar, that no, the throne was actually lowered for Moshe Rabbeinu until it reached 10 Tfachim, because Moshe Rabbeinu could not go above that. And Moshe Rabbeinu held it there, therefore Moshe did not go into that domain. Okay, so we just discussed the inyan of how we know this 10 Tfachim. The Gemara now is just going to digress to discuss a little bit the inyanim of how do we know that the Aron the Kaporis, the Aron with the covering, was 10 Tfachim. So the Gemara says, Bishlama Aron Tisha, so the Aron I know was 9 Tfachim, as it says, Dechsid. It says that the Aron should be made of this type of wood, 2.5 amos its length, and 1.5 amos its width, and 1.5 amos its height. And we know 1.5 amos is going to be 9 tefachim, as mentioned. So if that's the case, how do I know that the cover is going to be a tefach thick? Where do I get that from? So the Gemara says, the Tanya Rabbi Chanina, we learn in the Brice that Rabbi Chanina says, Kol HaKelim Sha'asa Moshe, all of the Kelim that Moshe Rabbeinu made in the Mishkan, Nasna Ben Teira Midas Arkan Midas Rachman Midas Kamasa. The Torah is very clear what is the length, what is the width of all of these measurements. We see all the Pesukim discuss the exact measurements. However, Kaporis Midas Arka Midas Rachman Nasna, when it comes to the Kaporis, the covering of the Aron, the covering of the Ark in the Mishkan, the Torah tells us its length, and it tells us this width that we just mentioned. However, midas komasa lo nasna, but it doesn't tell you the height. The thickness of it, meaning thickness is going to be the height of the kaporah. So I don't know the height of the kaporah. So the Gemara says, tzeh lamad mipachlo shebekelim. So we should learn out that what the Gemara is going to ask in a moment. Why are you assuming the smallest shear of any of the kelim? But that's what the Gemara is going to see in a moment. But right now, what that's what the Gemara is assuming is there are pashat that you should learn out from the smallest of the kelim of the base of Megdash. And what is the smallest of the kelim of the base of Megdash? This is a reference to the misgaris, the border that is going to surround the shulchan, that was going to be a tefach. And how do I know that? So that the misgaris is topach saviv, it should be a tefach. That's why it's a tefach. Malalan tefach. So just as there, the border that's around the shulchan is going to be a tefach. Avkan tefach. So tier the kapores, that the covering of the aron should also be a tefach. High. The Gemara asks, "Venelif mekelim gufayr." We should learn it out from the height of the kelim themselves. Not the where Rashi points out. We're talking about over here something that's not actually a kli, but rather something that's accompanying the kli. That's something that's but that's like it's secondary to the kli. It's not the actual kli itself. So maybe we could assume that the kaporis was an am and a half. This should be the height of the actual shulchan, not that it should be only a tafaf, which is something that was accompanying the shulchan. So the Gemara says no, because tafasta beruba lo tafasta tafasta mu'a tafasta. Why are we choosing a smaller shear of something that's only the tafaf that we know about? Because this is a famous principle. It's used in different contexts. Here, it's that you, when you have a chiddush, you don't know what to learn it out from, that you only take the smallest measurement that you know about. And that's similar to the other halachas that we learn it for. For example, I think by Zava, it says yamim, we don't know. Yamim could be how many days is it that a person becomes a Zava, that she has to see the planet the outside of her normal period cycle to become a Zava. Maybe it's 100 days, maybe it's 20 days. How do I know that? So we know that a minimum amount is 2 days. That's whenever the minimum amount is called the din of tafasta. So therefore, because of the minimum amount is tafasta, this concept of tafasta meruba lo tafasta. If you're choosing a large amount, maybe that's not the you're not able to learn that. However, tafasta mu'a tafasta, if you're taking a small amount, you're able to learn that. So in context over here, that when we have a measurement and we're not sure what that measurement is, so then we have only the right to learn with the minimum number that it's implied by it. So that's what we're learning from over here, that you take the minimum amount. So that's what the Gemara is saying. So the Gemara goes vayter. The Gemara says, so then the Gemara says vayter v'neilef mitzitz. So then, since we learn it out that you should learn it out from the smaller shirim, so the Gemara says there's something that's even smaller than even a tefach. The tzitz was the kohen gadol, right? We know the kohen gadol had four extra begadim on top of the four begadim of a kohen. Had yet they were the choshen, me'il, the ephod, and the tzitz. I always remember the chemetz. I don't know, it's just my mnemonic to remember it. So the tzitz is one of the extra four begadim that the kohen gadol used to wear. So the tzitz is, descend, how big was it? Tzitz domel kimin tashazad. It was a golden plate. Verach of shtei etzbos. All it was 2 fingers wide. That's all it was. And mukaf me'ozen lo'ozen, and it went out from ear to ear of the kohen gadol. Because of alav shtei shitin, and on it had 2 separate lines. Yod kei l'milamala, it had the words of Hashem, the yod kei on the upper line, v'kodesh lamed milata, and holy to Hashem is going to be on the lower line over here. The full 4-letter name of Hashem that's what was written. It wasn't just yod kei that we're saying; it was really yod kei vav kei. So the Braisa doesn't want to mention all the names. Why not? Because it doesn't want to spell it out. It doesn't want to spell it out because they're not. It doesn't want to spell the name of Hashem. It's just alluding to that letter name, as Tosfos points out. It's just alluding to the 4-letter name without actually referencing to it. The Chasam Sofer learns from the Tosfos that the Isser against pronouncing the shame of Arba Shemos is even just saying its letters in order, just writing the Yud, the K, Vav K. Why do we say Yud K? Why don't we actually say Yud and then a Hey and then continue that Lashon? Because that's from over here. That's what Chasam Sofer learns it out. He thinks that that's what Tosfos means, that you can't say the yud and the k. That's where minna comes from, a very strong minna that people have not to say the yud and the hey, rather the yud k. I'm just saying it for learning purposes, so I'm mentioning it now, but we really be saying when we're saying Shem Hashem, yud k vav k. That's where it comes from. Okay, that's a very interesting thing. That's that from this din over here, for the fact that the Tana is going out of space, I only mentioned the yud and the k, not could continue. That's what the Tosfos and the Tosfos, that's what Tosfos learns the source for that minna. So the Gemara continues, and the Gemara says that the Kodesh Lamed Milmata, that again, that the lower line had the words of Kodesh Lashem. So this is not so clear, what exactly does that mean? It's a big machlokas of the Rishon, and Rashi understands that you have Kodesh, and then above Kodesh with the Lamed, is Lashem is on the bottom line, and Lashem, the Yod Kei Vav Kei, is on the upper line. So Tosfos, I have a problem with that. They say it doesn't sound like you're saying Kodesh Lashem. It doesn't seem like you're saying for Hashem. It doesn't read properly. So Tosfos understand that the Kodesh and the Lamed of Kodesh Lashem should be more to the right of Hashem, and then Hashem should be above it on the left, but it should be more above it. That is a second sheet. There's even a third sheet quoted by Rav Achya, quotes in the name of the Ravid, and I think even the Rashba says it in the name of Rabbeinu Tam. We have Rabbeinu Tam differently in our Tosfos, but the Rashba had a Masorah that really somehow they missed. They understand that Gemara doesn't really mean that Hashem was above. Rather, the Shem Hashem was actually below. It says Kodesh, La, and then the bottom line, and then the next line over was Hashem. That's how a third sheet of how it was written. So the Gemara says, but anyway, what are we bringing this all out for? So we want to bring this out for it, but this is all less than a tefach. It's only two etzbos. Two fingers is smaller than a tefach. So maybe you should learn it's only two etzbos. So, but just finishing out the Gemara says, so I saw the tzitzit in Romi. So just he's mentioning how it looked. He says, because of Alav Kod Hashem B'shita Achad, I saw the name Holy Tashem. It was all on one line. It was not even on two lines, according to him. So he said, we see from the Braisa that the tzitz was only two etzbos. Just an interesting point that Chodim asked, wait a second, that was, he literally saw evidence. He saw a tzitz that said very clearly, Kol Hashem on one line, why don't we paskin? Why does everyone paskin like Rabbi Eliezer? Rabbi Yossi had access to the Kelim in Rome. They showed him the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, and he saw explicitly how it said Kodesh Hashem. So why didn't they paskin like that? So the Achronim point out that because at the end of the day, b'di'evit, it is kosher. So since b'di'evit is kosher, they couldn't use that as evidence that that should be enough to say that it was really in one line. But normally we would l'chora paskin if we knew that. That's what the Rosh Hashanah always likes to point out, that we do rely on archaeological evidence for tcheles. Rosh Hashanah always likes to say that by tcheles, that if you would find, when they found he likes to quote the story about Beishave Beis Hillel, there's machlokas of how many knots you have to have on your tzitzis. So one of the Amoraim was in the Midbar and he saw the Meisei Midbar. So the Chachamim yelled at him, they said, why don't you look at their tzitzis to see if we pass like Beishave Beis Hillel? What do we see? That if he had seen how the tzitzis looked, they would have passed in that halacha. So whether we go like Beishave Beis Hillel, okay, so we can use archaeological evidence. That is a very interesting point. Now the Gemara says, so why can't we learn out from the tzitz that maybe the Aron was not really in fact 10 tfachim, but maybe it was 9 tfachim and 2 etzbos, like the tzitz? So the Gemara says, down in kli mekli, we can only learn halacha from a actual kli that based on mitzvah, an actual vessel from another vessel. However, ain down in kli metachshe, we can't derive a kli, a vessel, which is something that's used as a kli in the based on mitzvah, from something else, as opposed to something which is a tachshe, that's only something that you wear, that's that you adorn yourself in it, you're wearing it, a lavush, that's part of the something that the Kohen Gadol has to wear, that can't be learned out from a vessel. That's what the Gemara wants to learn out over here. So the Gemara continues, the Gemara says, v'neileif mizer, so why don't we learn it out from the crown that surrounded the cover of the aron, there were golden rims that were around the aron, so, which we know that it was not a tefach, it was less than a tefach, even a smaller amount than a tefach was kasher. So the Gemara answers, "Dan in kli mekli." We learn halachas of a vessel from a vessel. They dan in kli mashakli. This is only something which is only secondary. Again, it's only something that adorns the kli of the aron. It doesn't actually. It's not fundamentally part of the aron. It's not integral to the aron's being there. It's just accompanying the aron. So the Gemara says, "Yachi miskeres nami hashakli." But so if that's the case, so then the Gemara says that when it comes to the Shulchan, how are we able to learn it out from the Misgaris of the Shulchan, which is also only secondary to the actual Kli. Alright, the Misgaris is only there, and Rashi points out, it's only there to make the Shulchan look nice. So it's only there to make the Shulchan. And it's also considered accessory, something that's secondary. So the Gemara says that it's only there to beautify it. So the Gemara answers, Misgar to Lamata, so that the Shulchan, the area surrounding it, the border around of the Shulchan, was actually below the Shulchan. It was not above the Shulchan. This is the Machlokas in Menachos. So the Gemara was assuming originally that it was above it, but now the Gemara, because of this Kasha, that if it's above it, it's only going to be an accessory to it. It's only going to be something that's part of it to beautify it. So the Gemara says, you're right, that really can't be that it was above it. It must have been below it, and which we're assuming that would make it an integral part of it, because if it's below it, then it's like it's something that's holding it up and makes it part and parcel of the actual Shulchan. So the Gemara rejects this also. The Gemara says that's only good according to Hanum, the Manda Amar Miskarta Lamata Haisa, which just says Machlokas in Menachos. So the Gemara says it's only good according to the Manda Amar Menachos that the Shulchan was below, that the border rather, was the Miskeres was below the Shulchan. El Manda Amar Miskarta Lamala Haisa, but the one who says that the border was above the Shulchan, Ma'ikal Mimar, so what are you going to say to that? Hai Hekshek Liyu, that this border is only considered an accessory part of the kli. It's not actually part integral of the kli. So the Gemara says, you're right, so we don't have an answer for that. So we have to learn from a different proof, Ela Danin, so we must learn out Davin, Davar Shenesla Batora Mida. We learn out the halacha of something which the Torah gave a clear measurement to. Midavar Shenesla Batora Mida. It's also from something else the Torah gave a measurement to. That the Torah doesn't specify how thick the kaporis needs to be. It does mention the width and the length. We know how long the width and length have to be of the kaporis. So therefore, we learn out that the kaporis has a shear, and therefore we're going to allow to We're going to learn it out to the shulchan. However, when it comes to v'alyochichud tzitz v'zer, the tzitz and the crown around these two things are not going to be a valid comparison because we don't that is not shlamim torah midaklal, that we don't have any shear. The Baisa mentioned that the shear is two etzbos, as Tosafot point out, but that's all Tosafot point out. That's all derabanan. So it has no shear midaraisa as opposed to the shulchan which had it. So therefore, we were able to learn it out from the shulchan. So the Gemara says. Ravuna Amar Mahachas. So Ravuna learns it out from a different. How do we know that the kaporas was a tefach thick? Ravuna says, I'll give you a different source. Al Panea Kaporas Kato. The pasuk says that when the Torahs are referencing to sprinkling the blood on the kaporas. So the Gemara says, so we learn out from the pasuk, Ain Panin Pachos Mitefach. You're putting it on a face. So what does it mean, Panea Kaporas? What does it mean? This is a reference to the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, who we just finished Yuma. So the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur is spreading it on the face of the Kaporas. What does it mean, the face? So the Gemara says that we know that whenever a reference to a face, it finds like a face of a person. We know a face of a person has to be at least a tefach in height. So the Gemara says, Ve'ima ka'ape, maybe you say that the cover is as tall as the face, ka'ape, divar yochni. Turning on to the next element now. Maybe it's much bigger face. Who's a face? Yeah, we just had a face. A minimum share of a face is going to be one tefach. Maybe it's a much bigger tefach. Bar Yochani was a massive bird. As the Gemara in Bechoros talks about, that there was an erg of Bar Yochani, that once it fell and liquids came into it and it shattered, Rashi says that it was like 100 cedar trees. It's the Gemara over there says that. So it's a massive bird. So we're saying that something in the face of this bird would be much more than a tefach. So maybe the kaporas is more. It was taller than a tefach. So the Gemara uses the same answer we saw before, that when you have different shirim, we don't know what to use, then tafastim ruba lo tafastim, you have no right to use the larger amount. Rather, learn out tafastim ruba tafastim. If you're grabbing literally the smaller amount, that's the way to learn it out. You learn out from the smaller amount and not from the larger amount. So since we learn out from the smaller of a human face, that's going to be only a tefach. That's where we learn out if the measure is a tefach. So the Gemara says, "Ve'ema ke'ape de'tzifirta de'zuter tshuva." But maybe we should say that we learn out from a face of a much smaller bird, which a much smaller bird will be less than even a tefach. So maybe it should be less than a tefach. So the Gemara says, "No, Amar Bacha Bar Yaakov Ravuna pnei gamar." So originally we thought, the Aruch points this out, but originally we thought that maybe we're learning out from a mamatzinus. We're just trying to use comparisons. So once I'm using comparisons, start comparing it to this bird, compare to that bird. And the answer is answering, no, we're not using it for comparisons. We're using actual Xer Shava. We're learning out the words of Pnei Pnei, that it's Dafka Pnei of a face of a human, not a face of any animal. And how do I know that? What is it? Ksiv Acha al Pnei Kapor, the Pasuk by us, says that it should be the face of the cover, of the covering of the Aron. Uksiv Hasa Me'eth Pnei Yitzchak Aviv. That in reference to a human face, it was never small in tefach, so then we're learning out Pnei Yitzchak is going to be, Pnei is reference to a human face, and therefore it's never going to be more than, it's not going to be, the minimum shear is a tefach, so we're learning out that it should be dafka a tefach. So the Gemara says, but wait a second, b'deilef me panim shel mala, but if you're learning it out from Xer Shava of a face, maybe you can learn it out that the kaporas was much higher than a tefach from the panim shel mala of an angel, a face of an angel, which is larger than a tapach. Dechsev kiros pnei Elokim v'tir tzeini. The pasuk with Yaakov Avinu says that it says, which is like seeing the face of pnei Elokim v'tir tzeini. And you repeat by me the word face over there is a reference to of an angel, face of an angel, pnei Elokim, a reference of an angel, and it's larger than a tapach. So the more answer is tapasu ruvla tapasu tapasu mul tapasu. Right? You could have learned that Xer Shava, but apparently even within Xer Shavas you should learn the more limiting Xer Shava. If you take the larger amount, then you're taking too much. You're not able to learn that. So we see that we're learning out from the smaller human face as opposed to the malach. So the Gemara says that v'neilich mikruv. But wait a second, maybe we should learn it out from the kruvim. The kruvim, we know the two kruvim were the two things, the two golden figures that were above the aron, and they faced each other, and they had bird-like wings and human faces. We're going to see below. So it says by the kruvim. It says by the kruvim, the siv elakaporis yupnei kruvim. That towards the cover, the face of the kruvim going to be. So, and we know that the kruvim were actually less than a human face because we know that the average person is twice as tall as a kruv, which is 10 amos high. So we're learning out that the kruvim were smaller. So there it must be that it was smaller. Less, it's going to be less than a tefach. So the Gemara says, Amar v'acha bar Yaakov, gemirin ein pnei kruvim plusin mitefach. We have a mesora, halacha Moshe v'Sinai, that the faces of the kruvim are not less than a tefach tall. Rav Huna nami ma'afu gamir nechanami. Rav Huna said from here that the cover was actually a tefach tall from the actual kruvim. We're learning out that kruvim were in fact actually a tefach tall. They weren't less than that. We originally thought they weren't, and we're answering no, that they really were. Okay, so the Gemara says, what is the lashon of kruv? Once we were mentioning kruvim, the Gemara asks, so my kruv, what is this lashon of kruv? So the Gemara says, Amar Bibau, kiravya. It's like a child, shekin bebava, according to Yonuka Ravya. That in Bava, they use the lashon of a child, they call him a ravya. So how are we learning it out? The lashon of ke. Ke literally means it's like. Kiruv. Ruv is like a child. So we're learning out that this lashon of kiruv means it is like, it has a face that is similar to a child. This is one of those things you learn in the kindergarten, it's based on this Gemara. Now we learn that the kruvim are the face of a child, based on this Gemara is kiruv, that it's like the face of a child. So the Gemara says, I'm going to let Baye. The Baye asks, El me'ata dechsev, p'nei achad, p'nei akruv, p'nei ashini, p'nei adam, that these are the, in Yecheskel, these are the famous four panim, and based on the ofanim. The different animals in the Afanim, and there's a lot of pikabalah about this, about the different things in Nesher, right? The shore, the different animals that were in this vision over here of Yechezkel. So either way, it says pnei echad, pnei akruv, pnei ashini, pnei adam. That one of the faces is the face of a kruv, and the second face is the face of a man. Hainu kruv, hainu adam. Now, if the word kruv really meant is like a child, then the face of a kruv is really the same of the man. So since the kruv and man are similarly in two different categories, it would seem that a kruv is not referenced to that of a child, not of a human. So the Gemara says, Ape rabbe ape zute. No, a kruv does mean like a child. However, the Yechezkel is telling us that a kruv from an adam is that because he has a large face, and then a kruv of a ape zutra, that is reference to a child, has a small face, and that's why it divides it. And that one of the child one is going to be the size of a tapach, and we're learning out from the one of a child. So the Gemara that we just learned out, that we went back to the understanding what of a kruv is. So now once we learn out that the Aron and the Kaporas were 10 tefachim tall, the Gemara wants to know minimum shir of a sukkah. The Gemara says, "My the chala sarah bar mischacha." But wait a second, we just learned out that the Aron with the Kaporas is going to be 10 tefachim. So maybe with the schach, if you learn out with the schach, it should be 10 tefachim as well. Ima b'hadis schacha. Say that the 10 tefachim are measured with the schach, and that would be enough. If it's 9 tefachim, the schach will make it 10 tefachim, it should be fine. The Gemara is assuming, based on the lashon of the Mishnah, that the actual sukkah needs to be 10 tefachim, and above the 10 tefachim needs to be the schach. The Sfasam has given a beautiful explanation. He says, why does it have to be above 10 tefachim? Because 10 tefachim, we just saw, the Shekhinah is only yorid above 10 tefachim, and we know that the sukkah is so kaddish that the Shekhinah comes down to the sukkah. And that's why you need your sukkah to be a minimum of 10 tefachim. Very interesting. So the Gemara says, Ela mibeis olamim gamar. So maybe we learn it out rather in a chanam. If we learned it out from the Aron, we would have learned out that with the schach it's 10 tefachim. But since we know it's above 10 tefachim, so we're learning it out from the base of Migdash, based on the reference of the base of Migdash. God, we're learning it out. Dechsev, the pasuk says, Vavayis Shabana Hamelech Shlomo. The pasuk says that the literally the house that Shlomo built for Hashem in the base of Migdash was Shishim Amma Arko, Shishim Rachbo, Shloshim Amma Komaso. It was 60 amos its length, 20 amos its width, and 30 amos its height. Dechsev, Komas Akruva Echad, Eser Bama Vechena Kruva Shemi. And it says that the height of the kruv was 10 amos, and so was the second kruv. So that unlike the kruvim of the Mishkan, which stood upon the Aron, the kruvim that were by Shlomo, they were on top of the ground, the karka of the Kodesh Kodesh, Rashi points it out. V'tani, we learn in Rebaisa, Mamatzinu v'beisa lavim kruvim b'shlish abayi sein omdin. Just so we find out in the Beis HaMikdash, the kruvim were a third of the structure in the Beis HaMikdash. So we know that, right, that the Beis HaMikdash was 30 amos high, and the kruvim inside were each 10 amos tall. So Beis is telling us that the kruvim were a third of the height. So too, we're saying that Mishkan Nami kruvim b'shlish abayi sein omdin. We can assume that in the Mishkan as well, the kruvim were standing at a height that was a third of the total height of the area was in. So the Gemara says, so how, let's do the cheshbon. Mishkan Hamahavah, how tall was the Mishkan? Esra Amos, we know that Mishkan was 10 Amos. If Siv, Esra Amos, or Rech HaKarash, the 10 lengths of each plank, and that was supporting by the height. Kama Havilihu, so how many Tzvachim are in 10 Amos? We know that each Amma is, but this may be a Shaila later on in a moment, but for now we're assuming it's 6 Tzvachim. So then, Shitin Pushchei, you're left with a 60 Tzvachim. So Talte Kama Havis, how much is a third of 60? So this is basic math. Now, is Eshrim Pushchei 20 Tzvachim? So the Baisa told us that the Kruvim reached a third of the height. So now we just know that the 20 tefachim on the ground is the area. So how much were these Kruvim? So the Gemara says, Da'alasar, Da'ar, Ve'kaporos. We know that there's 10 tefachim height of the Aron and the Kaporos. So then what's left is Pashal Asar. There must be 10 tefachim. The Kruvim were 10 tefachim tall, head to toe. So the Gemara says, We learn the Kruvim with the wings spread above the cover of the wings. Here we see that Kadosh Baruch Hu has a lashon of sukkah, right? Lashon of sukkah over there is covering it. So we learn out that it has to be 10 tefachim. So the wings that are above the kaporis, the words of sotatim, which is lashon of sukkah. This is implying us the space between the wings and the cover is going to be like a sukkah, and full tfentfachim, we're separating the wings from the kaparis and the cover, so therefore we're learning out that a sukkah has to be the interior of the sukkah, not just with the schach, but the actual interior of the sukkah has to be tenfachim. So the Gemara says, but how do I know that the kruvim's wings were above their heads, so they're covered tenfachim of airspace? Maybe the wings were alongside the heads, and therefore it was part of the tenfachim, is going to be within it. So the Gemara says, and then the schach should be within the counted in the tenfachim. So the Gemara says, with the wings it says above, it must be they were above their wings. So the Gemara says, wait a second, but maybe the wings were much above their heads. So the Gemara says, no, because it doesn't say miksiv lamalamal, it doesn't say they were way above. It implies that they're above, they're immediately above the head of the chruvim. Now the Gemara says, Hanifla Rabbi Meir, that this whole limud makes sense according to Rabbi Meir, because the Amar Kalamos Hayubenos, Rabbi Mamos, there was three different sizes of the amos in the Mishkan. One was an amo was 5 tefachim. One was exactly 6 tefachim, and one was 6 tefachim and a little bit. So that's why we're calling him Beinonis, because there was a third one that's even, he's saying 6 amos, 6 tefachim rather, is one amo in the Beis Hamikdash. But that is the minimum is the middle shear. There's a shear that was even above that was a 6 and a little bit. So he said that there were 6 tefachim. That makes sense. This whole limud makes sense according to him, because the 10 tefachim would be learned out from the Aaron and the Kaporis if they were 6 tefachim. However, according to Yehuda, the Amar Amah Shabinah Shisha tefachim, who says that Amah was in fact was a six tefachim, Michelle Kalim Chamisha. However, that of the Kalim, the vessels, was going to be only 5 tefachim. Ma'ik Lamimah, what is Rabbi Yehuda going to say? Arm the kaporis kamahava. How the arm of the kaporis, how much was it going to be? 10 apaga was going to be, only according to him, 8.5. Because again, the Torah told us it's an amma and a half. An amma and a half times 5 is going to be 7.5. Even if you assume that the kaporis was an extra amma, you're only going to get to 8.5 according to Reb Yehuda. So the Gemara says, so when you have that, there's going to be 11.5 tefachim in between their wings. Because that's the cheshbon that's going to come out. So then, it's a problem according to him. According to him, you're going to assume a sukkah is allowed to be, needs to be 11.5 tefachim. We don't see that anywhere. So the Gemara says, you're right. According to Yehuda, we have to assume that it is halacha lo should be Sinai, that a sukkah requires 10 tefachim tall. That the measurements of, let's say, ksayis for isra achila by chalev and all those things and a ksoves for Yom Kippur, the date measure for Yom Kippur, and all this shiurim, that is going to be halach. Those are halach of Moshe Mitzina. Same thing with regards to mechitza, that you need a mechitza needs to be 10 tefachim halach of Moshe Mitzina, and chatzita. I skipped that. The chatzita is the middle one. That's a chatzita, something that's a barrier, something you don't want there to be there when you go to the mikvah for both a man and a woman, and also for kalim. If you don't want to be there, that's a chatzita. Those are halacha lemoshe misina. Okay, we're going to come tomorrow. The shiurim deresu asking the question: is that really true that shiurim are not learned out explicitly from sukkim? But Ez Hashem will pick up with that tomorrow.